This is BMI Redefined with Jin and Mo.
All right.
Welcome back, everyone, to BMI Redefined with
Jin
and Mo. Welcome back, and we are so excited to have our guest here today, Dr. Kristen Lloyd, PhD, newly. Mm-hmm. Welcome. Yay.
Welcome.
And she is here today, and she is the CEO of Bariatric Mindset, and she is an author. Wait a minute. I think I've got it balanced here. Wait a minute. So many books. Okay, there we go. Okay, there it is. Yay. And she is an author, she is a coach and a mentor, and she's a college educator and a consultant. Kristen has lost 200 pounds following gastric sleeve surgery. Congratulations.
Congrats.
And she understands the struggles and shares the experiences of bariatric patients and what we endure. And I'm including myself in that. And that's why we're here, because I met you actually through Patricia Hills, my bariatric kitchen. And I was so impressed with you. I was so impressed with Patricia and Natalie, who is the exercise specialist, that I came back and I told Jin, we have to have these people on our podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And so here you are. So welcome.
Yes, welcome.
Yay. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Good. Yay. Okay. So, Jin, would you like to go ahead and ask our guest her first question?
Yes. So Kristen, we were just talking with my surgeon recently in a podcast interview about the concept of resilience, particularly when it deals with somebody who is looking toward having some type of medical procedure or some going through some type of challenge in their life, physiologically, mentally, emotionally, what have you. So we'd like you to kind of talk to that as far as what you see the role of resilience in working through bariatric or any type of challenges that you see people having these days.
Sure. So in the bariatric community, I think resilience is not talked about enough. And as you were mentioning, when it comes to any surgery, resilience is important. And there have actually been quite a few studies done to show the importance of the placebo effect and the importance of our belief system in that something is going to work for us. And with that said, that belief system is something that we can harness and take hold of. And that can turn into this resilience, because when you go through any type of surgery, whether it's a cancer treatment or a bariatric surgery, which are very, very different procedures, the follow-up is very important in terms of what the patient is doing, right? Mm-hmm. So, and the patient's belief system. So are they feeling that they're going to get better? Do they believe that they have any type of power over their circumstances? And that is very much psychological, it's mindset. But again, a lot of the research shows that this is fundamental. Specific to bariatrics though, there will be adversity. And I will tell my clients, and I wrote it in my books, it's not a matter of if you experience adversity, it's a matter of when. And when you experience adversity, you need to know that you are resilient, that you can handle it, and that you'll get on the other side of it, and that you will use tools, coping mechanisms, methods to get through the adversity. So someone who's diagnosed with cancer, we would say, yes, of course, but how does that apply to bariatric surgery? Well, it's different because people expect that they had the surgery and they're going to lose weight right away. And what I see all over the message boards are people who are like, oh, I hit a stall for 3 weeks. Oh, is this all the weight that I'm ever gonna lose? And there's very little trust in their body. There's very little trust in what they're doing. And there's a lot of hopelessness. And we see with obesity, there is the co-occurring disorders of depression and anxiety and a lot of mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And so people will go and get bariatric surgery. And I'm not trying to make a huge blanket statement, but there are a lot of people who will get bariatric surgery and not get any mental health component. They won't necessarily do any type of therapy. Although the pre-op psychological eval is required in the United States. But if you go to get surgery in Mexico, it's not required. Mm-mm. And so there are individuals who may be struggling mentally and emotionally with their relationship with food, with their weight, with their body image. They may even have an eating disorder, and that's not being treated. So when we talk about resilience, it doesn't just mean, did you get to goal? It doesn't just mean, do you feel good about yourself? It has to do with mental health issues. It has to do with your emotional health, your ability to deal with difficulty, right? So somebody might get a flat tire on the side of the road, or they got laid off from their job, or they're getting a divorce because their spouse doesn't like that they've lost so much weight, that they married them heavy and they want them that way. Like, we see that in the community. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so adversity has many faces. And so for someone to be resilient, they need a mindset of believing in themselves, of having a toolkit of, like I said, coping mechanisms, and really having grit to get through it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that leads me actually to my question. I'm going to hold up your book. Here it is. It's a little wet because I read some of it in the tub.
When somebody says that they're reading your book in the bathtub, I think it's a dream come true.
So it's a little warped, but it's used.
Now, you said you were reading it on the toilet,
that would be different. That's a different story. Well, no, I'm teasing. Okay. So... So in this book, there's chapter 11, and it says release negativity and the past. And I would say that in 2012, after my mom passed away, my life kind of just fell apart. I knew she was going to pass away, but it didn't really prepare me. And I really packed on the weight, probably about maybe 60 pounds, I packed on 60 pounds. We all know the real numbers. We just sometimes don't want to say it.
Right. I get it.
So, anyway, you know, I turned to food, and that was my, whether I was feeling happy or sad or any type of emotion, it just kind of went to that. And then I went and I knew I was going on this bariatric journey. And so what I did was I went and I had therapy, and I learned that underneath all of this was the trauma of losing my mom. And so I worked through that. And, you know, so it's just, I mean, that chapter really, really spoke to me. And, but the thing is that with all of these things, especially in 2012, I just felt exhausted from everything. I felt tired because it was really weighing on me until I went and got some help to talk through it, to get myself through that. And then I was ready for the bariatric surgery. So thank you for writing this book. And thank you for pointing out this whole idea of, you know, releasing the negativity. You have to release it so that it's like closing the door so other doors can open, right? So can you expound on that chapter a little bit more, maybe?
Yeah, I almost, and I don't think I wrote this in there, but just in listening to you talk, it's almost like you have to clean the skeletons out of your closet. Like, you have to clean out the closet, right? And you said,
or at least pick it up.
Or at least pick it up, right? You've got to clean out the gunk so that you can open yourself up to new opportunities. And, you know, five different things popped into my head as you were talking, because when someone is going through, let's just take that example of grief and loss, right? So and someone who's experiencing grief and loss, if you don't know how to cope, then a lot of individuals will shut down and isolate. And when you shut down and isolate, it turns into a depression. Mm-hmm. And when you're depressed, some people lose their appetite and some people eat even more. Some people use food as a way to comfort themselves. And so that is one part of the cycle. Another part is when you're going through a depression and you are not functioning, you can't even think about, what am I going to eat that's healthy for me? How am I going to maintain my weight? Your brain does not even go there. Mm-hmm. You're just thinking, what can I get that's going to taste good that I don't have to move off the couch? So right. Depression and grief together, I think, enable someone to gain weight. If I could use that word, enable, right? Because they're not looking at how can I get better? They're struggling with feeling what's coming up. And that's right. What grief and loss is. And I see this frequently in our community postoperatively, where someone's doing great, they're 2 years post-op, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden their father passes or their mother passes, or somebody's diagnosed with cancer, or they need to take care of a sibling. And they get thrown off because now all of right. a sudden there's these additional responsibilities and they can't manage them all. They can't juggle them all. And then they don't even think, how can I get this done? Because they're literally in crisis mode. And when you're in crisis mode, you're not thinking, oh, what's going to happen if I gain 50 pounds? Your brain doesn't go there. And okay. psychologically speaking, we look for the fast track. We look for mm-hmm. how we can expend the least amount of energy doing something, right? Mm-hmm. Although when we think of diets and weight loss, we think of how can I expend more energy to burn off so many calories, right? That's what the diet industry teaches, is you have to expend more calories than you take mm-hmm. in. And it's not that simple. And many of us know that, right? It's not a calories in and calories out. Calories are not created equal, et cetera. And I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, but
right.
the purpose of me sharing that psychologically, we want to do as little work as possible. And what I mean by that is your brain is going to look for the fast track. Your brain is always going to look for what's the easiest way, especially when you're dealing with something as complex as grief. Because you're going to be more lethargic. You're going to be tired. Depression wears you down. And so when you're experiencing something that's very emotionally heavy, you're not going to think about how can I maintain my weight, because you're just thinking, how am I going to get through today?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
so
yeah.
when you get to a point of releasing the negativity, it's right. where you work through a majority of that grief to then say, okay, how can I take care of myself? However, I would like to empower individuals who are going through grief, going through adversity, to have a toolbox. It's almost like the way that I think I explain it in Release Your Regain is, in the back of all of our cars, I guarantee that we have a jack and a spare tire. Not because we expect that we're going to get a flat tire, but because we know it could happen. It's a possibility. And yet I know that 70% plus of our population doesn't have coping skills or coping tools. I call them life skills to help us deal with adverse situations, because we just don't think about it in the same way that we think that we need a jack and a spare tire in our car.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Right. Right.
And yet it's more fundamental. It's more important than having a jack or a tire.
Right. And it's also like, you know, it's also how do we reframe our thinking and how do we plan? Right. So, right. you know, I mean, let's go back to the grieving. I knew she was going to be passing away. There's no way I can really plan for that.
No.
But I can have a couple of things in my back pocket to pull out to at least be proactive, maybe.
Right.
Instead of reactive.
Correct. And it could have even been, you know, nowadays a lot of people do meal trains and stuff, right? Where, right. And I also strongly encourage people to advocate for themselves. And this goes down a totally different line, but around Christmas, tell people, you know, hey, I love gift cards. Please don't get me chocolate for Christmas. Please right. don't get me food gifts. That's a totally different prep. But, you know, in advance, you could even say, if people are planning to provide me a meal train, please, you know, make it low carb. Some people might say, oh, why would you do that? And it's like, because you're looking out for your health. Like, why wouldn't you say that? I think we need to be much more vocal about our needs. Mm-hmm. And the old mentality was, you know, you don't look a, what is that saying? You don't look
a gift horse in the mouth.
Yeah. Right, right. But I think it's important that we do need to voice our needs and our yeah. desires to share with others. But along that, it could have been that you said, okay, I'm going to go out for a mental health walk every day. So many people see mm-hmm. Exercise as a weight loss tool. I see it first and foremost as a mental health tool.
Yeah.
You going for a walk for your mental health is important, even if you, I don't feel like it. That's okay. I don't have to feel like it. I'm still going to get up off the couch and I'm still going to go do this 10-minute walk for my mental health and for clarity. And prioritizing healthy foods. And you can't think about that after the person's gone, but ahead of time, you could start to stock your freezer and things like that. And with your story, I had already had surgery, but in 2017, I lost my dad and I was a whole week in the hospital. And I had many more coffees that week than probably anything else, but I walked the halls because I couldn't. Like, what was I going to do? He was on a respirator. Like I wasn't, and he had had brain surgery. So it was, we were just waiting to take him off the ventilator yeah, and to right. let him go and to make that decision. And it was very empowering. I never went to the cafeteria. I went to, you know, I had gotten like chicken sandwiches and ate just the chicken without the bread. Mm. Like I had prioritized that because me overeating wasn't going to bring him back. It wasn't mm-hmm. going to make a difference. And I knew that if I was going to need to be there for everybody else, that I was going to need to be healthy.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good, good, good.
Well, and that's what I talk with clients about too in the training industry is, you know, kind of getting inside their head and figuring out like something that you mentioned in your books and some previous conversations we've had about the triggers, you know, what leads them to the behaviors and how do we work on that behavior modification? And it's very much a mental mindset.
Yeah. And really tackling the urges and looking at what is eating this going to do for me? Because there are, even now, I'm nearly 7 years out and there will be times where I'll go, ooh, that'll be good. And now I've trained myself to go, and what is that going to do for you? Mm-hmm. Like, how is that going to help you or get you to where you want to be? And it doesn't mean that I don't occasionally indulge, but the other piece of the mindset is pre-surgery, I would have those same thoughts and it was 4 days a week I would indulge, but but my mindset said, you don't do it that often. But yeah. if I tracked it on paper, like we can actually trick ourselves in mm-hmm. thinking that we don't do it that often. And really it was like a 4 to 5 times a week habit. Mm-hmm. And so it's perception.
Mm-hmm.
What is your perception about often right. or not that often?
That's right.
Right. And we can trick ourselves.
And a mantra we hear a lot these days is whatever behavior you're engaging in, does it bring you joy? And that's something that we hear a lot. And especially
say that again.
Yeah. This mantra we hear today is whatever behavior you're engaging in, does it bring you joy?
Does it bring you joy?
That's true.
Yeah. And there's a difference between a facade of happiness and or temporary and then overall real joy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And something you mentioned about perceptions too, Kristen, that's something that Mo and I have talked about during this whole podcast series is the idea behind perspectives and perceptions. And it's how, you know, how we see ourselves, how we see our own behaviors, as well as how others perceive us as well.
Yeah. And I don't know who it was, but we can lie to ourselves, say, oh, that's okay. You know, it's just a little nibble or it's this or that. and you don't really get mad at yourself. You know, I mean, you know, you, or you let yourself, not mad at yourself, you let yourself off the hook a lot more than maybe you'd let someone else off the hook, you know? So
yeah, that's a good point.
Give yourself more permission because, oh, you know, and that's a part of you becoming a friend to yourself or liking yourself and saying, well, you know, you're a friend of mine, you know, do you really need to have that right now? Or is this right. emotional eating or is this real eating? Are you really hungry? You know, and that's that self-care, right?
Well, it's self-care and self-trust because
that's what it was.
Yeah. You are driving by, I don't know, a Dunkin' Donuts, for example, and you're like, oh, well, it's just this one time and you rationalize and, oh, it's just this time. And then you leave and then you beat yourself up for having done it. Why did I do that? It's literally abuse. It's a cycle of abuse. It's just happening inside your head. And so you let yourself off the hook, you rationalize the behavior, you made an excuse for it. You didn't stand up to, you know, that little person on your shoulder that goes, come on, it's just once.
Right. Well, you know, and you know what really helped, what's really helped in what you wrote about too, is that the starting over thing. I have used that since I've been reading your book, and I just got it like 2 weeks ago. So I've been I also got it on audio. So while I'm cooking, I listen to your voice, just so you know. Anyway, you're in my head. No. Anyway. So when I've been listening to that, the starting over right away, like the other day, okay, kids are here. We have a chip drawer. Now, I know that that's not probably the best thing to have in my house, but we have it.
I have a 7-year-old. I have one too. I get it.
You know what I'm talking about. I do. Okay. And Jen, you've got your little chocolate little thing. I've seen her stuff, her stash. I'm like, can I have some of that? No. Anyway, so I have, so the chip drawer, and I literally walked to the back. I opened up the little bag of Doritos and I'm like, okay, I really don't need this, but I'm going to eat it as I'm eating it. And then I'm like, you know what? They really didn't taste that great, first of all. I think they're kind of stale. Second of all, I'm going to try this. I'm going to start over right now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start over by, if I'm hungry, I'm going to have start over with my next meal, which is my snack. Okay. So I'm, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to start over with that snack and do all of that. So, and I did. And I felt great. It felt good to have that, to be empowered, to make that decision for myself.
Yeah. And I encourage it because it is empowering to start over. And the old diet mentality is like, oh, I messed up. There's a whole lot of shame, blame, and guilt involved. It's not necessary. And shame, blame, and guilt, they're all socialized emotions.
Right.
They're not like core emotions. They're socialized emotions. They're who other people told us who to be, how to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so really they're unnecessary. And yet because of the socialization, they're part of who we think we are or who we want to be. And then it just creates this conflict and this contrast within us. And that starting over, it's not only a clean slate, but it's also letting go of the need to beat yourself up,
right?
The need to abuse yourself for, you know, the Doritos or whatever.
Exactly.
It's like, let it go, move on. Like, what did I learn from that? Oh, wow. Yeah. I learned they weren't that good. I learned that, that I can sometimes go ahead and eat them while I'm talking to myself. What did I learn from that? How can I do that better next time? Like, that is so much of a better reframe. And then restarting and saying, okay, that's done. That's over.
And here's the present.
Here's the present.
Yeah.
Well, and I like that immediate restart mode that you talked about. And
it's great. It's helped so much.
Yeah. How many of us through our lives have said, well, we'll start that Monday, you know, whatever it is, if it's a project, if it's changing our eating or whatever we're doing, it's always a put it off till a certain beginning of the week. Well, it doesn't have to be that way. You know, I love it. So you start right now. Yeah.
Well, that's her. That's Kristen. That's not Mo.
Well, that's Kristen. But I mean, you applied it. That is awesome.
That's like from this book and this book.
Yeah. Kristen, you want to talk a little bit about that? Kind of like, you know, not waiting till a certain date to start going toward that goal again, like having that immediate.
Well, when you wait, it encourages like a food funeral. Right. And so a lot of people before they have weight loss surgery have this food funeral, or that it leads them to a binge. Mm-hmm. So, you know, okay, so it's Thursday. All right. So I'm going to have cheesecake this day, and then I'm going to have pizza this day. And the idea behind that is that I'll never have it again. And that idea is actually a false ideal, because it's encouraging you to binge. It's encouraging you to eat unhealthy versus to eat healthy. And it's actually not even normalizing food, right? It's actually abusing food, because there's this fear. It's from scarcity. I'm never going to get it again. Whereas if you assure yourself, you know what, I can have this again. I just choose not to have it today. It's a lot more empowering. Along those same lines, it's summer, right? So my son wants ice cream. And when we do go out, because we haven't been going out a lot, he's like, can we have ice cream? And I'm like, we can have ice cream, but today's not the day that we're going to have ice cream. Like, and so I say that a lot more often, and he will ask. And then, you know, invariably there's one or two days in the summer where it's like, yes, as a family, we're going to go have ice cream. But more often than not, we're not going to go have ice cream. But I'm very careful in reinforcing to him, yes, we can have it. And I can have it absolutely anytime I want, which is empowering. And I'm choosing not to have it today. Because if I tell myself, and you tell yourselves, no, you can't have that. No, you can't have that. You're on a diet. No, you can't have that. Then a lot of times what will happen is you think about and you start to just perseverate on, and you know, you can't get it out of your head. You're dreaming about it, right? Now the ice cream has Oreos and gummies, and they have a whole family going on, and you can't get it out of your head. And it just goes even worse. And then even when you have it, it's like, oh, why did I have that?
Yeah.
So it's easier, and I find that it's more empowering to say, I'm making that choice not to have it. But with the restart, just restarting now, you're not having to wait, and there's no scarcity.
Right.
And when you create scarcity, it creates a gap between who you are and who you want to be, because you're still not that person yet. But if you're restarting, you're that person. You're that person that you want to be.
Yeah.
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 That's powerful.
Yeah. That's great. Jen, do you have another question?
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more, as we got into a bit of it, about the whole mindset? Okay. So we were talking about, you know, we talked about resilience and all that, and triggers and all that, but what about just overall importance of having a strong mindset when you're reaching for a goal as important as your health?
Well, I think that the real focus of, or the underpinning of having a healthy mindset is also your why. And this is something that was not my original idea, because there's Simon Sinek, Start With Why. But I do believe finding your why to your health and wellness journey is very important, because I see all the time in our community, people go, I'm doing this for my kids. I'm doing this for my grandkids. I just want a healthy blood pressure. There is nothing, nothing exciting about a 120 over 80 blood pressure. I have never seen anybody set off balloons, get excited. Yes, I have 120 over 80. It's just not stimulating for your brain. It's not exciting. It's just not. But when people say that, I'm like, wah, wah. Like, it's just not exciting. Your why, the reason that you're going to commit and follow through with some hard things, it's not because of your blood pressure or your blood sugar, even if your doctor says that it's something you got to do.
Yeah.
Right. So
Right.
Your mindset is also about why you want this. What is it going to do for you? What are you going mm-hmm. to get from it? Why is this important for you? And so kind of going back to that idea of the diet mentality, the reason that diets don't last is because, number one, they're meant to be short-lived. They're not meant to be lifestyle change. We're cultivating lifestyle change.
Right.
And lifestyle change is for the long-term, but in the long-term, you've also got to have a long-term, long-haul mindset, which allows for the ebbs and flows. We're not perfectionistic. We're not going to do 100% of the things 100% of the time. And that's where people get stuck, is in all or nothing thinking. Mm-hmm. Oh, I had a piece of chocolate. I'm bad. Kind of like back to that, restart. Yet it's all or nothing. It's like, okay, I had a piece of chocolate. I'm still alive. I'm going to be okay. And being able to not just start back on a healthy eating plan, but to say that that's what ebbs and flows, like life. We see we're in the middle of COVID. We're dealing with uncertainty. We're dealing with a lot of different restrictions. And so life has uncertainty. Life is full of, we don't know what's around the corner, right? That's just part of life. Why would that not also be a part of your mindset? Yet we're expecting certainty. We're expecting rules. We're expecting that it needs to fit in a box. Mm-hmm. Life mm-hmm. does not fit in a box. So the mindset piece is very important, because as I said earlier, we all need life skills. We need coping skills. Primary importance. We need to know that when there's adversity, that we can overcome, and that we're resilient and we can handle the different things that come at us. That we have support and a community and connectedness, because that's part of a healthy mindset, is connecting with others who are going through a similar journey.
Yeah. And if you don't have a community, they're all over. They're on Facebook. They are on, is there something like called Meetup or something? I don't know. They're, yeah. Everything is, you, there's something for everyone out there.
Right.
And so no one should feel that they're like in their home completely isolated.
Right.
You know? Because quite frankly, that could possibly be a choice, you know? And some people may not feel that they have anywhere to go or whatever. But there are places out there that are available if you reach out.
Correct.
You know, so.
And while you're talking virtually too, right?
Right.
Exactly. That's what I mean, virtually. You know, because.
Yeah, during this time.
I mean, yeah, I knew when I was overweight, I didn't want to go anywhere or do anything. I don't want to go and meet up with a group. I felt so, defeated or whatever. But, but releasing I call it my suit, releasing my suit, I found a different life for myself, which is great, you know? So yeah, it's been kind of fun.
But
it's a lot of work. It's work though. But yeah, it's right. The mindset, the identity, but you know what though, but it is a lot of work. I mean, it's,
that's the other piece is after. Yeah. Post-op, people say, oh my gosh, this is like a second job. Well, if you haven't done this before, if you haven't meal prepped, if you haven't moved your body and worked out, if you haven't implemented these things, yes, it will take a bit of time to implement. Usually about 6 months to a year to create this lifestyle change where you can kind of get it down pat.
Yeah. And I was sitting in my car listening to your book. And when you said that, I'm just kind of plugging it here and there. When you said that it takes about 6 months to a year, I thank you for saying that. Thank you. Because that is the darn reality. Because
really
the
is.
22 days to 30 days, you can change a habit.
One.
After 30 days.
One habit. One.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that to me.
That's like 10.
Right. To me, I'm like, oh, I can change everything in a month if I just stick with it. No. Mm-mm. And the thing that I like about working out with Jen is that I don't feel overwhelmed. I feel like, okay, this is going to work this, or this will work this. And okay, so why don't you focus on this week? you know? I'm like, okay, that's cool. Because I feel that with even with surgery and even without surgery, even with just like weight loss,
right,
and whatever, I feel like sometimes people get so overwhelmed.
Yes.
Okay, you have to do the nutrition, you have to meal prep, you have to exercise, you have to work on your mind. Well, that might take forever. You know, that's a lifetime. And the exercise, it's like, well, you know, okay, so what do you prioritize? What do you put it, you know, how do you figure it all out? You know, it just becomes like, you know, but if you just take maybe little by little, I don't know, a little bit from here, a little bit from here, and a little bit from here, and work on it. Because you can't do it all.
You can't do it all. And the other thing that people expect is that you go from 0 to 100.
Yeah.
0% to 100%. It does not happen like that. So, I use the example of juggling. We're not going to juggle with 7 pins today. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen. I'd be lucky if I got one up and it stayed up, right?
Right.
Time. And then you build in another, then you build in another. But if you're trying to, okay, for our bariatric basics, we have food and tracking. And I kind of put that in one, which is a meal prep, because you're not necessarily meal prepping every day. It's usually about once a week. Mm-hmm. And then, you want to get at least 64 ounces of water, potentially more. You want to be moving your body for fitness. You want to make sure that you're getting adequate sleep, because sleep impacts weight loss. Mm-hmm. And then you want to make sure that you're taking your supplements. And that was 5. And then 6 is you want to make sure that you're stressed, that you have tools to de-stress, because stress and sleep are the 2 main predictors of weight regain and weight mm-hmm. gain. Mm-hmm. Because stress, as we all know, produces cortisol. Cortisol floods your system, so does glucose. If you don't use that, it gets stored as fat. Like, that's just, you know, something that is kind of like weight loss, weight gain 101. Right. And so people don't recognize, oh, why am I not losing weight? And it's like, you could be on 1100 calories a day, but your stress hormones are through the roof.
Right.
So let's look at that. And then you're not getting enough sleep, so your body's not resting. Oh, and by the way, you're not getting enough water. So when you look at this and people are going, okay, well, I'm stressed about the other 5. How do I de-stress and then do those things? Well, it starts with, again, the baby steps. So maybe you start with something like a simple breakfast or a simple lunch, and then you're only prepping meals or prepping dinners. Mm-hmm. And then you go out for a 10-minute walk a day. But again, if you were to look at a chart, and none of us are going to create a chart, right? But if you were to look at, okay, I'm doing 10% better this week than I was last week on this. It's always, again, that ebb and flow. The expectation is that we're going to get it 100% of the time and it's going to be perfect. That is just not the case.
Well, it's setting you up for failure.
Because again, yeah, it's the all or nothing thinking.
Right. And you can't do that.
And you can't do that because it's a variable and it's a variation, and it depends on schedules and so many other things.
I know.
So the way to empower that is to set smaller goals of, not even SMART goals, although SMART goals are great, but it's, you know, setting yourself up for success by maybe having a little morning routine where you get your water together and you kind of know what you're going to eat for the day, that you schedule in a walking break where you're also listening to a podcast, maybe BMI Redefined, right? and you're doing that. And then you can look week to week and say, wow, because I see people all the time that are like, oh, I'm doing great with this, this, and this, and I've fallen off track with this. That is normal. So then through that awareness, you pick it back up and you integrate it in. Mm-hmm. And none of us are going to be 100% all the time. There are still times and days of the week where I'm like, wow, I didn't get as much water in. This is not a competition. This is not a, you know, I met all my stars, or I have to, or else I'm worthless or meaningless. Mm-hmm. It's a continuous improvement and goals to be set so that you can achieve those things. But when you derive meaning about who you are as a result of your bariatric basics in a negative way, then it's going to set you up for failure. So it's definitely encouraging to say, wow, if you were to look at it reflectively mm-hmm. over the course of 8 or 10 months, because it does take that long. Wow. When I started, you know, 8 or 10 months ago, here's where I was. I'm doing so much better with meal planning.
Right.
So much better with my sleep or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's just a matter of congratulating yourself and finding the positives instead of, oh, I really failed at this, or being a Debbie Downer.
Celebrating your successes, building consistency. Consistency is key. It's not what you do once that makes a difference. It's what you do over time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's true. And then I talk with clients, like one day they'll be able to do, like, we do mountain climbers with the furniture movers or whatever we're doing. And you look back and you say, like, well, you know, 3 months, say, well, I can't do as many as I want. Well, 3 months ago, you weren't doing it at all. And now look what you're doing. Oh my gosh. And so it's just, you know, it's the little steps along the way to keep their, their mindset positive, you know, that they had, they may not be at the end of the finish line, but they're definitely on the track, you know?
You telling my story.
What?
Without saying my name. We're talking after this. No exercise stories.
Right. Or you could do, I had a client.
Like, remember, Maureen, when you fell off the ball?
No, I didn't say that. I did not say that.
Sorry.
Well, I mean,
we'll talk offline.
Right.
To practice a 30-second plank versus a minute plank.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. No, then that is for sure. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I think we have to wrap this up.
Yeah, it's been great.
We could talk forever.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. Are there any lasting things you'd like to impart upon our guests?
It might be just to summarize that there's no such thing as failure unless you give up. So you're always learning from every fall, and it's not a matter of if you fall or if you mess up, it's a matter of when. And when you do, you always have an opportunity to learn and grow from it. And that's part of developing a growth mindset. So learning from those missteps, mistakes, or poor choices, mm-hmm. and growing from them. And the all or nothing thinking needs to go into the trash. It absolutely needs to go in the trash, because it will always be a variable experience where you're getting better in one area and something else might lose its way. And then you've got to bring it back into the fold. And so this is a lifelong learning journey. It is about skill building. It is about personal development, really getting in touch with who you are. It's an identity changer for sure.
Yeah.
And I would just say that no matter what you're going through, compassion, compassion, compassion. And compassion is not indulgence, which I talk about in the book.
Right. Good. Excellent. So if anyone is interested, there is a online Facebook emotional support group for pre-op and post-op bariatric patients called Bariatric Mindset Mavens. And you can find more about you on bariatricmindset.com and your YouTube channel, Bariatric Mindset, and your two books, like I said in the beginning, Bariatric Mindset Success, which I actually have a pen in there because that's where I left off, and Release Your Regain, okay? And there's also a mindset journal that goes with the first book. There it is. So, you know, really wonderful talking with you today. Thank you for
having me.
And if people want to see you, they can actually see you August. What are the dates for?
8th and 9th for the retreat.
For the retreat. So there's a retreat that you can sign up for through My Bariatric Kitchen with Patricia Hill. Yep. And it's 2 days of just fabulousness. And there's you and Natalie Heckert and Patricia Hill. And the three of you do just such a fantastic job of bringing everything together, the mind, the body, the food.
Yep.
It's really amazing. So, yeah. So thank you. And if people want to take individual coaching sessions with you, are you available or are you taking new people?
My practice for one-on-one is completely full.
So, oh, man.
But okay. How people get on the wait list is by joining one of my programs, either my membership, so the Bariatric Mindset Mastery Membership, or to get into my group program, which we will be relaunching for enrollment the middle of August.
So, okay, good. So there are options.
There are options.
Good. Okay.
All
okay.
right. Great.
Thank you.
Yay. Thank you so much, Kristen, for joining us. This was
Yay.
Great.
Well, thank you, everybody. And we will see you next time. And yes, we will. I'm going to go get some coffee. Okay. We'll see you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.